Telecast.
Hello and welcome to another Telecast. On this week's show, I'm chatting with Chris Hilton, boss of Australian independent production company Tilt Media, who I caught up with at the recent Sunnyside of the Dock event. Plus, I meet with Ukrainian producer Pavel Cherepin and hear all about his nomadic indie United Heroes group. It's all coming up on this week's Telecast. So I'm here back in La Rochelle in France for Sunnyside of the Dock. It's been a year, obviously, since I was last here. A certain amount has changed in the unscripted space, but we can talk about that and lots of other things with my first guest on this week's show, which is Tilt Media's Chris Hilton, very well known within the unscripted community and fresh over from Australia. Chris, how are you? Good to see you again.
Just a bit of jet lag, Justin. It comes with the territory. I was here last year as well and kicked off a project on the war in Ukraine and dashed off to Kyiv, found a few partners, found some money, and we've delivered six episodes now called Citizens at War, A Year in Ukraine. So it's been a busy year.
It certainly has. Well, well done. Well done for getting the plug in so early in the in the chat. Let's talk about that in a second. But first of all, you know, many people know you from Essential Media. You know, Chris Hilton and Essential Media, they were sort of forever known together, really, in the unscripted business. Tell us a little bit about the beginning of Tilt and the end of Essential.
Well, I guess if we start at the end of Essential, then me and my fellow shareholders sold that company to Q Media, which then went bankrupt about 18 months later. And I left and had a year and a half off, and after 35 years of hitting it pretty hard with filmmaking and multiple projects a year, it gave me time to reflect about whether I wanted to continue, because our industry's not all roses. And yeah, I've still got plenty of fire, so I found myself a partner investor and started up Tilt, and we're doing scripted and unscripted again. My partner, Craig McMahon, is a film financier and has funding behind him and is doing big $100 million movies like the Robbie Williams biopic. And so we're also doing some feature films as well.
And you've got a great track record when it comes to feature films. There was a Tom Hanks film that you
Saving
were...
Mr. Banks, yeah, with Disney. Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson, about the Australian author of Mary Poppins.
Many people would say, after those experiences that you had, you know, everybody knows to create a independent and successful international production business, why come back to it? After you put your feet up and you went on your boat and chilled out a little bit, why now? What's making you hungry enough to travel the world again to create new projects and with essentially a new landscape as things have changed since COVID, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the thing about our business that I absolutely love is the collaboration process, that you can make things happen with other people. And it's such a collective process, making films, and kind of magic can happen. The synchronicity happens, and when you meet people and get fired up about their stories and you think, you know, I can add this bit and they can add that bit and I know someone who can do this part of it, and that is a really creative and fun process. It comes with its difficulties, as we know, and it's complicated and got many, many contracts, and you've got to cash flow them sometimes, especially if they don't pay until delivery. But it's the collaborative nature of our medium that brought me back to it.
You obviously have built a huge amount of contacts over that time, so really, you know, in terms of being able to slide back into it, no barriers, really. It's pretty much, you know, you can pick up where you left off with lots of these production partners and distribution partners and networks, etc. Hence you being here.
Exactly. I mean, it was a bit daunting, the idea of starting again, but it's a lot easier with a bit of capital behind you as well than when you start just with one project and then you're trying to develop a slate without much capital. So, you know, I've had a bit of a push along, which has been helpful, and yes, I have a lot of contacts and a lot of friends around the world, and coming over here isn't really a drag. La Rochelle's a great place and I get to see lots of friends, and you know, you meet people and make new things happen as well that you hadn't thought of. Someone's got an idea or a conversation. you know, over a drink, and you know, anything can happen.
When you've been in the business for so long, there's no doubt you must have a whole drawer, you know, drawers and drawers of great ideas that for whatever reason never happened at a particular time because of the market or because of a particular commissioner or because of...
It's too far ahead of its time.
There you go.
Yeah. As well, too far ahead of the wave, the zeitgeist, yeah. Yeah, often we had that process of thinking, this is what the world needs, but the world hadn't realised that it needed it yet, and so you'd pitch too early. And then you'd forget about it, and then a few years later, there's the show that you'd pitched, and someone else has made it. And it wasn't stolen. It's just that, you know, someone had to make it sometime.
Yeah, right idea, wrong time.
Sometime. Right idea, wrong time. Exactly. Yeah.
So, what do you make of the unscripted marketplace right now, Chris? Because everybody that I'm speaking to is, particularly UK producers, are saying it's dead. We all know. Covered this a couple of previous episodes of Telecast, you know, talking about, you know, how no commissions are being made. And in fact, Ian Katz, content chief at Channel 4, said, you know, we've got short-term issues here. You know, we're putting projects back. We're cancelling some projects completely. Our commissioning is severely restricted. First of all, are you finding that is the case in Australia?
Yes, I would say it's pretty round the world from what I'm hearing from everybody. Yeah, it's tough. The streamers, of their business model's been challenged, and they're really not picking up many documentaries from what I hear at the moment. And I've heard about this, what's been going on in the UK, where there seems to be a glut of commissioning after COVID. That wave is now exhausted, and there's a lot of people scratching for a living in London, apparently. And that's the Hollywood of factual programming, or the Hollywood of unscripted programming, as I always called it. So, yeah, that doesn't not a good sign. Although the writers' strike might mean that it swings back towards unscripted, because it used to. I mean, the writers' strike, not the last one, but the one before that, was really the birth of reality TV. Same ratings, cheaper programming, and...
A lot of hours to fill.
A lot of hours to fill, and no writer needed. Or no guild writer, anyway.
I'm sure somebody's hatching a plan around that right now to take advantage of that lack of content that's going into some of the US networks in particular.
There's also been severe disruption, as we know, with consolidation, you know, the Discovery Warner's merger, whatever you want to call it, and all the rest all over the place.
There's rumours now that Comcast might be looking at the Disco Brothers, as they become known. It's the big fish is keeping on eating the little fish all the way along.
Consolidation, consolidation, consolidation. Yeah. So, yeah, probably not the best time to be getting back into it. But then if you've got... And I think the pressure's also on scripted as well, because there's probably been a glut of programs there. And we're doing a preschool show, so if it's got integrity and purpose, we'll do, you know, any genre. And I said we've got some feature scripts as well, so...
One of the hallmarks, I think, of Sunnyside of the Dock is the number of PSBs that are here. There's state broadcasters from all around the world make the trip here, and not only from Australia, but this year we're seeing the return of China, a lot of Asian countries presented here, which they perhaps weren't last year, and we're seeing the old stalwarts in across Europe as well.
I don't notice the BBC here, though, do we? Are they here?
Not as far as I know.
There you go. It's no longer part of Europe. Don't give a shit.
Well, that's another subject entirely that we can get into. But my question is, are public service broadcasters back in vogue now as like the number one target for a producer? I mean, you're going to say whoever's going to commission the show is the number one target, I guess. But isn't it the case that a lot of public service broadcasters' budgets are obviously not at the whim of the advertising market, and they've got long-established relationships, and they know how much content they're going to be commissioning every year? Might not be quite as much as it was last year, and a lot of producers may have turned their backs on PSBs, quite happily take the Netflix dollar. Do you think that's the case? Are you getting that sense from people that you're speaking to?
Well, I think the public service broadcasters are still in the documentary business, and a lot of other people are getting out of the documentary business. If we're talking about, you know, specifically documentaries, you know, and they have charters for social purpose and reflecting their societies and reflecting world events. So, and that's common territory for documentary documentary makers. So, yeah, I guess they've always been the backbone of factual, really. They were the original backbone, and they're probably others have come and gone, and they're still the backbone. Yeah.
Some people may say, oh, they're back, but realistically, they never went away, right? They weren't the first chosen partner to lots of producers, and those attitudes are changing. Tell us about that project that you talked about right at the beginning of our chat, this Ukrainian project.
I have a friend, Katerina Beneska, I think it is. She's from a studio in Ukraine. She's been a friend of mine. In fact, we went to the C20 one party in Ibiza.
She appeared on the telecast show from Kiev, and we did a interview when she was literally in and out of the subway, sheltering from Russian
and
bombs.
And trying to shoot us a drama at the same time, I believe, yeah?
Well, I think she was. She's an incredible lady. She was trying to do many things, I think. One of those was to stay alive. And she's really, you know, been travelling the globe, really, under the Ukrainian banner and waving the flag for the country. So you've worked with Katerina, then?
Yeah, so Katya is a friend, and we met up at Content LA in May. And no, in fact, we'd been texting before that, because as soon as the war happened, or the invasion, we started texting each other and talking, and her mother was stuck in Mariupol, and so it was all very personal for her, and I became quite obsessed, like a lot of old white guys, I think it is, but I became quite obsessed with that war and the struggle of the people, and the inspiration behind it as well, of the citizens coming together to resist. So we brainstormed a series, and then I developed it and partnered with Tilman Remy, who's a London-based German producer, and the usual Cutter Sizzle went and developed it, got access, went to Ukraine, got ZDF on board, and so public broadcaster, you know, PSB, and SVT, public broadcaster, Sweden. In France, no public broadcaster, but we got Histoire, which is the History Channel, French History Channel. Yeah. Three co-producers, three broadcasters, and a sprint to get it done. For the first three episodes were done for the first anniversary of the invasion, and then we've just delivered the second three episodes a few weeks ago.
Congratulations. Well, that's fantastic. And can you just give us a very top line on the series then, and what it's actually...
So it's a documentary. It's like we call it a second draft of history. So it's five characters per episode. Sit down, detailed interviews. It's their experiences in the first 10 days, just the first episode. We had Zelensky and his wife and some his childhood friend, his producer, so that was sort of like a bit of a biography of Zelensky. We had women at war, you know, a sniper, a medic. It's people that were civilians that had become, you know, galvanized by the invasion. And then an episode about the siege of Mariupol, and which is people trying to survive and get out, and then an episode on volunteers, and then one on the Russians, the kaleidoscopic mind of the Russians.
It seems fascinating, and you know, I remember in the days and the weeks, not that we knew at the time, before the war, when you'd see news reports of a baker holding an AK-47 or doing, you know, basically being out in the middle of the woods, you know, just holding the front line. I mean, obviously they were waiting for the invasion. Nobody really thought it would happen.
You know, in the first episode, there's a 65-year-old bloke who went and volunteered on day one and picked up a gun, and taxi drivers and all sorts of different types of characters who all lent a hand. One was our sniper's a fabulous character. She's she was a beauty queen, you know, with a jewellery business, living the high life, and, you know, with a fancy car and a fancy house, quite successful. Her dad had been, had always had guns around and took her shooting, and she was Annie Oakley or whatever. She went to the front line and started hunting down, you know, Russian generals. And
wow. Well, it sounds a stunning show. I look forward to seeing it. Hopefully a UK broadcaster is going to pick that up at some point.
Yeah, well, Blue Ant's distributing it. Normally, you wouldn't make a series about a war until the war was over, and then you do a retrospective. That's the usual way. And Current Affairs think they've got it all covered. So, you know, Sky got their own news department, Channel 4, BBC, they've all got their own news departments, I think. And they're all so producing their own documentaries, I guess, as well. So, yeah, it's kind of a crowded field as well, and they probably don't think they need it. But hopefully they'll look at it and change their minds.
Yeah. So what's next for Tilt, Chris? Where are you going from Sunnyside in La Rochelle?
I'm going to Paris. We've developed an Aboriginal Australian French co-production. So I'm looking for partners and I'm meeting casting agents to cast the French actors for a series that we hope to be doing for the ABC and potentially Arte France. It's been in development for a few years and we're at pilot script stage, and so yeah, looking for money.
All right. Well, that's it.
Actors and money.
The call of the producer never changes.
And then back to London for a week to have some more meetings. Yeah.
All right. Good. Lovely to bump into you here, Chris. Great to see you back on the circuit. Good luck with all your pitching, all your projects, and particularly that Ukrainian documentary series. I can't wait to see that. Thanks a lot. I'll see you around. I'll see you at some other far-flung European city at some point soon.
Okay. Thanks, Justin. See you.
So my next guest at Sunnyside of the Dock here in La Rochelle is Pavel Cherup. Pavel, how are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you, and thank you for the invitation. And I think that this edition of rainy / sunny side of the dock is really great. My first time here, really enjoy.
It seems to be busy, doesn't it? Lots of familiar faces here, lots of new faces as well. So Pavel, for people that don't know your business, and there's a bit of a theme running through this show because we just spoke to Chris Hilton about a Ukrainian project that he's just got away. First of all, tell us about the business and how you're operating right now.
Well, United Heroes is a company that was created in Ukraine in 2016. It was just Heroes at that time. And this is a set of labels that are doing content, making content in a different perspective. So we have Heroes Films for scripted, we have Heroes Formats for unscripted, we have Heroes Docs for documentaries, we have Heroes Production for commercials and music video, Heroes Interactive for edutainment content, and Heroes Animation is a new label that will come soon. The first two co-founders were me and Talia Gordienko, my wife, and at that time the finalist of the first season of The Voice, being producer and director according to her education.
So, in Ukraine, so in Ukrainian voice finalist.
Yeah, right. Ukrainian voice finalist, someone who knows one of the best formats ever from inside, which is quite unique competence for Heroes Formats co-founder and leading producer. At that time, I just quit my professional sports career. I was World Rally Vice Champion, and I raced for M Sport and for Darnitsa Motorsport as a sponsor, and M Sport as a technical team based in UK. It's a Ford factory rally team. Amazing journey, 5 years I devoted to motorsports in my life. And before this, I was a sports producer, sports commentator, TV host, so we were colleagues at a certain moment. So the company was based in 2016.
Two well-known figures in the Ukrainian industry, I guess, in that sense, you know, in terms of known to the public. If you were known as a sports commentator and rally driver and your wife, I mean, that's it's a Ukrainian power couple almost.
It could be door opener at a certain moment, and definitely it helped because we were quite good in branded content and we created several unscripted shows that are traveling since that time. And of course, some commercials. We have very strong creative competence inside the team. We love to tell stories. Being a music video, commercial, short film, scripted, unscripted, it's just the instrument to tell the story. Because in the end, we are keen to tell stories internationally. And yeah, we have good international connections, and the company was built as an international group of companies since the very beginning, since 2016. And we are thankful to our partners internationally, and especially in the UK, who really influenced on our decisions at a certain moment. And we had a strategy. And actually, the fact that we had a strategy built in 2016 and corrected from year to year helped us to survive when the huge disaster came to our country, when the full-scale invasion started. I'm calling this full-scale invasion because the war started in 2014, when territories of our country was invaded and annexed. And now we have full-scale invasion. business-wise, it was very hard, and human-wise, it was even harder, because I wouldn't explain how is it, and I wouldn't even try to make you understand this, because it's impossible.
I'm sure that myself and our listeners as well can't comprehend the trauma and the upset to have, you know, families and communities, you know, split apart and killed. And we're a business podcast.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated in the way that you've kept your business going. And obviously the first thing to do was to move out of Ukraine with a successful production business and spread your team across Europe. Tell us about that.
Right before the war, we joined forces with the most famous Ukrainian feature film and feature animation producer, Igor Olisov. And he became the third co-founder of Heroes, and that is how Heroes became United Heroes. It's not because just three people united together. This is because of our strong vision and strong persuasion that heroes should be united. This is about heroes united to tell amazing stories. This is about our crews and our teams and our producers and directors. And at the same time, this is about the characters of our content. Because in Ukrainian language, heroes, characters, and protagonists respond for the same word, heroi. So when you say heroes, it's not about someone, you know, who's doing something else.
You're not calling yourself a hero in
case. In this case, we can be the characters, the protagonists. So these are heroes. This is a sort of Ukrainian DNA in the international brand. And together with Igor, we added scripted and animation competence to great slate of heroes and made it United Heroes. And we signed several big co-production contracts with a strong Ukrainian agenda, but unfortunately most of them are frozen. But with Igor and with his great co-production international experience, with his Gareth Jones, Mr. Jones title, with Vanessa Kirby and James Norton filming in his film, with Robert Patrick starred in his film as a Ukrainian king in his previous company. I think we get a significant addition to the strategy of international company. And our plan was to make a smooth change of the balance from 85% of local business and 15% of international to make it vice versa. We plan to make it in several years, but we were forced to make it in 11 months.
Yeah.
We thought about stop working 5 days a week before the war. We stopped working 5 days a week. We started to work 7 days per week. It was a really hard year for all of us. Of course, we made a lot of things out of the business. But without the help of international industry, of particular people, of our partners in international business, especially in UK, I should mention Lucy Shannon from 53 Degrees North Media, who really helped in a human way and in a business way. She really shaped some things in our strategy. And in her person, I would like to thank to the whole industry, media industry, who helped their Ukrainian partners worldwide, because without the help, we would not make it, definitely. We started with co-productions, because co-productions is the most frequently used word in our strategy. The co-production really saved us in the first year. We made several projects, I should mention Cyber War 2022 documentary that is in 32 countries now. Well, it's traveling. I should mention Scarman, our unscripted show that is sold to 6 territories as a format and keeps on traveling. And we are creating more, we reinvest, and we are now in 7 countries, either as a legal entity or as a strong representative. So I mean countries where you can meet us in person today, if you want to meet us in person today. We are in Israel, we are in Poland, we are in Portugal, Switzerland, Italy, Ukraine, of course, and UK. Our main company is in UK.
So you've got an incorporated business within the UK?
Yeah, so if you work with us and you're a British producer or British production company or British broadcaster, you work with British company. And we build the chain of rights to make it all clear, transparent, legal, as our legal office.
I'm also seeing you popping up at industry events and festivals and markets. and you're often certainly shortlisted at a lot of the pitches that are going on. Is that that's a conscious strategy for you to get out there and be on these pitch panels, seeing where things are going from that aspect?
Yeah, sure. It's written in strategy, and we prefer having this experience of producing experience, again, of professional sports. We understand that preparation is our everything. We should have a clear vision of what we are doing. And, of course, some success is unexpected. You can never expect wins of, like, MIBDOG pitch this year earlier. That really helped in making us more visible on the market. And, of course, like, today we were on the stage in Budapest. Next week we will be in Toledo. So wheels are rolling, and we are happy to have this opportunity, and we should be thankful to Armed Forces of Ukraine to make this possible. Like, today we have three crews filming three different projects in Ukraine. Two of them are our APs. One of them is service project that we are filming for our international partners. So we are doing CGI, we are doing reenactment, and, well, we are doing things in Ukraine as well as internationally. So we cannot complain. We should work as hard as possible and then see what will be in the end of the day for us.
Well, I mean, it's been a remarkable story the last 2-3 years for you as a business, and I think just your determination to keep on going and get out there and work hard is a real inspiration, I think, you know, and it's fantastic to see you here, Pavel, you know, and I know you're going to be in Toledo next week for Connector Fiction as well, so yeah, you're on the circuit.
We live under Sir Winston Churchill quotation that when you are surrounded, you can attack in any direction. So you just need to choose the proper direction and pay real effort to make it come true. This is our main strategy. So we see the direction and we apply our competences to make it visible.
Yeah. You've obviously got projects that you're pitching, but wider than that, are you looking for co-production partners on any particular projects, or how do you want to collaborate with the industry at large?
The only and the main thing we are looking for on every event we are taking part, it's not broadcaster, it's not commissioner, it's not distributor. First of all, it's human, and then it's vibe. We are looking for the vibe. So when someone is scrolling our catalog, scripted, unscripted, documentary, whatever, and at a certain page, the heart starts beating faster, that means that we found the vibe. And the rest are details, because if two professionals are inspired on the project, on the topic, on the way to tell the story, that means that we found the common vibe, and the rest are details. We will find money, we will find broadcaster, we will find everyone, every element that we need to tell the story, because we have a vibe, we have inspiration. This is an engine and the fuel at the same time.
As I keep on saying on Telecast, it's a people business, isn't it? I mean, it absolutely is. And when you're talking about personal interaction between creative people, then those are the sparks that make projects happen.
Yeah, exactly. This is that, you know, magic, that magic dust. You may have it, you may not have it, but you should not make, in this industry, you should not make it industrial. You should always make it with the heart, with something bigger than just making the project. Project should be an instrument to reach somebody, to tell the story, to explain something, to make something happen, to make an impact, but not to make a project.
Yeah. I hope it's not too far in the future to look ahead to the future of Ukraine. But let's say the war stopped in a month's time. Let's imagine that was the case. Let's hope it would be the case. It's probably unlikely it's going to be the case, but let's just imagine that it happened in a month's time. What would be your plan? Would you be move back as soon as you can, get back, build your business again there, but also obviously having huge international experience that you're gaining now? What would be your plan?
So first, you made 6 mistakes in the world victory. I mean, that victory of Ukraine is inevitable, and we do not consider the stop of the war. We consider only victory. Unfortunately, from our perspective, from what we see from inside, we will have it for years and years. I mean, not the war itself, but the consequences of war. We don't know when it happened, but definitely all Ukrainian and allies are making best to make it come true. and the price is very high. And definitely the plan for us, we cannot stop thinking about it. We don't know when it happens, but when it happens, we will definitely use all our benefits from international experience to make Ukrainian filmmaking industry more international, because we see how many doors we can open with international approach, not with the local one. And of course, not all, but many Ukrainian filmmaking professionals that are working worldwide, they will come back to tell their stories, to use their experience to tell the story. And of course, we were building international company from the very beginning with significant Ukrainian DNA. So we will keep this DNA, but we will input international experience to it. We will promote international co-productions with Ukrainian producers and directors, not compulsory with heroes. I mean, there are many companies and many talented people in Ukraine who deserve international co-production, deserve international audiences. So we will promote it, and we have the plan in development now how we will make it. Even on our small level, when we make, for example, format option or format license agreement, we have discount if the production company has significant number of Ukrainian staff to make this format in their territory. So they can save both from license fee and from having international level staff.
In supporting those Ukrainian people wherever they are, right?
It's the smallest thing we can do. So in the projects like, for example, the Game for Ukraine, which is quite big now and we are quite loud now. So we are in the process of this Game for Ukraine stuff. We were one of creators of this concept together with the Legends. Again, they came to us as a co-producers and asked to make the story together. And we were happy that someone has this idea to make something big like this, like the game on the Stamford Bridge with supporting Ukraine concept and so on. But I hope we will finalize it, that CGI and VFX for the game will be made by Ukrainian company, that we will have Ukrainians not only on the stands and on the pitch, but also in the technical stuff that will do, because they can do things. I remember I was a participant of Arte workshop earlier this year in January, and one of top managers of Arte, after watching the showreels and teasers of 10 Ukrainian documentary production companies, he said, "Guys, I'm amazed. You know how to hold the cameras." God, yes, we know how to hold cameras. We know how to hold weapons, even international, you know, even NATO pieces. We know how to write treatments, how to write scripts, how to pitch projects, well, and how to hold trophies in the end of this pitching, in the end of the day. So, yeah, we are, unfortunately, the price for this promotion campaign is too high for our country. But as far as we are in these terrible conditions, everyone should do his best on his position to promote the idea of collaborating with Ukraine and with Ukrainians on the best possible level.
Yeah, well, hear, hear. And hopefully some of our listeners will be doing that already. If they're not, then seek out your local Ukrainian co-production partner, or even better, speak to Pavel here, and I'm sure you can get him on LinkedIn and all those other things. Pavel, thank you so much for joining me. It's been really fascinating chatting with you. It always puts me in a different place when you talk to somebody whose country's at war, and it's very easy to forget that and get almost hypnotized by news and get desensitized to it after a certain amount of time. But it's brought back a lot of what you and your fellow countrymen and countrywomen in Ukraine are going through. So the success that you're having is real testament to that attitude. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, and thank you to all the audience, and it's a great opportunity to tell the story. Always lovely to talk to you, and promise that after the victory, one of the episodes we will make in Kyiv.
We'll do that. I'd love to. Thanks, Pavel. Well, that's it for another week's show. As always, thanks a lot for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Telecast was edited by Ian Chambers and recorded in La Rochelle, France. We'll be back with another show next week. Until then, stay safe.